if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 157. This is our 2021 Masters In-Depth Research Preview. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss the most highly anticipated major of this year and every year, the Masters. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
I was checking out, Barry, last year's Masters podcast research piece, yeah? And you said to Paul he needed to be more enthusiastic at the start.
Yeah.
And he was more enthusiastic this year.
Yeah. Good.
So that's a good start.
Absolutely. Listens well.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge. There is no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We are available on social media. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. He's approaching 2,000 followers. Paul is at Golf Betting. He's still approaching 10,000 followers. And I am at Bamford Golf. I have no idea how many followers I've got. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, as ever. For those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Secondly, if you are in the growing band of YouTube listeners, please subscribe to the channel and like the show. Right, a couple of reviews here, gentlemen. Number one. Title, Top Quality Tuesday Listening, 5 stars, highly rated podcast, informative, insightful and all-round great listen, gives us something to look forward to on a Tuesday. And that is from Russell, and he is in one of your old stomping grounds, Paul, Welling Garden City, Hertfordshire.
You better go and knock on his door from where you are, Steve.
Yeah, you remember when I backed Tom Lewis a few weeks ago and I said I'd send the boys round? Well, Russell could go round there for me.
Yeah, was that when he missed the cut, Tom Lewis, was it?
I remember, Paul, when you were one of the boys around town in Welling Garden City, selling TVs and warranties like it was going out of fashion.
Back in the day, eh?
Back in the day, eh? Right, second review. It's the golf. This one's entitled, It's the Golf Betting System, the Golf Betting System, the Golf Betting System podcast. Very good. 5 stars, right. Paul and Steve are the best. They haven't mentioned you, Barry. Even if they sound different or funny most of the time, because, well, they're British. They use terms and say things differently than we do. But that's okay, because they give out some of the best golf betting advice you will find in the entire world. I have listened to them now for a few months, and there's no comparison between them and the other podcasts. They are always my first listen on a Tuesday as I prepare to place my wagers. I feel like I know them from listening in weekly and pine for the day when I can meet up with them for a pint or three. And that glowing review, which doesn't mention Barry, is from Ryan Penn, and he is all the way from Denver, Colorado.
Lovely stuff. Thank you, Ryan.
Don't give Ryan shit for not mentioning me. It's okay.
We did go through a stage, if you remember, Barry, when you were always too diva-ish to come on the show. So I expect he was listening to them then when you went on.
Don't sweat it, Ryan. We're all good.
No, I thought Ryan was going to say he's pining for the day when we get a winner, Steve.
Did you see that comment I sent to you yesterday from YouTube where Matey had literally counted the amount of selections you and I had put up without having a winner? Somehow we tend to scrape a lot of each-way returns that kind of cover the weeks or sometimes make profit. But yeah, we are on a bit of a dearth of a run when it comes to winners. But with the Masters only 2 weeks away, what a time to start getting on a run. Right, I'm going to mention this straight from the top of the podcast, okay? Some exciting news. Over the course of 10 years, Golf Betting System have pulled together some exciting boosted odds offers with Treble Eight Sport, and 2021 is no exception. So, for new customers 18 plus across both the Republic of Ireland and the United Kingdom, Treble Eight Sport are offering huge boosted odds on three of the big favourites for the 2021 Masters. So, you can choose one from either Dustin Johnson at 66-1, John Rahm at 100-1, or Bryson DeChambeau at 100-1. This offer is live now, and to access it, I have put a link through to the promotion in the podcast description, or simply come to Golf Betting System and look in our promotions column on the homepage or within my Masters research article. Post registration with Treble Eight Sport, you must make a £10 or €10 first qualifying deposit using the promo code, and this is important, Treble Eight Odds. So when you make your first deposit, there is a promo code section there. Just type in Treble Eight Odds, then make your first ever win-only bet on either Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, or Bryson DeChambeau to win the 2021 Masters with a maximum stake of £5 or €5. Extra winnings are paid in free bets. Full terms and conditions are available on the website. So DJ at 66s, John Rahm at 100s, or big dog Bryson DeChambeau at 100-1. For new customers 18 plus in the Republic of Ireland or United Kingdom, with Treble Eight Sport. Not a bad offer, that.
No, lovely stuff. Hopefully we'll see a few other competing offers over the next week or so too to tell you guys about over the course of our forthcoming podcasts. But yes, nice for Treble Eight to kick off the kind of campaign season, I guess. Be interesting to see when some of these bookies start to extend their each way terms as well, because it's been... Yeah. Been a bit slack so far. I see Betfair and Paddy Power both extended theirs to eight places recently. Yeah. That's the only one that I've seen really go anything
that
sensible.
That wasn't there when I last looked Tuesday. So yeah, they've done that in the last, say, 24, 36 hours. So eight places each way, Paddy Power and Betfair Sportsbook right now.
They had that. They had the eight places up for a few weeks because I jumped on Tony Finau 25-1, and that is not looking so smart at the moment. I don't know what's going on. So yeah, write that one off and chalk it up to experience. But this year for the anti-post markets, they just haven't been very fleshed out or developed. It just seems like a thing across the board, so you just got to really hang on till the end of the week unless you find a nugget like you did, which was, again, Finau, wasn't it, for the US Open, Steve? 40-1.
40-1, yeah.
That's still going to look okay. Like, he's probably just in a little micro slump right now, but yeah.
I think it was probably a month ago now, because Paul and I were on the podcast that week.
Yeah.
And literally, I backed him as Paul was going through one of his tournament sets of tips because I just couldn't believe the price. I was in shock. At Torrey Pines, which has got to be one of his, top two or three favourite golf courses? Bombers at US Opens. Yeah, not a bad way to go. Right. We have the Masters starting in a fortnight. We're recording this on the 25th of March, but this research... podcast will be, you can listen to it at any point up to first tee off, really. Augusta National, Augusta, Georgia. A Dr. Alistair McKenzie and Bobby Jones, 1933 original, with various redesigns and renovations. I mean, they tinker with the golf course every single year. You know, tees have been moved, or a trees have appeared in the driving line somewhere, or something's happened, or a putting surface has been made larger, or there's a few more contours on it. They're always playing with this beautiful piece of land. I have it down as a classical old style golf course which tends to bring together a mid score winner. Now, of course, DJ last year, bearing in mind that they played it last year in November because of COVID, and as we, you know, as we said beforehand, the course played longer, it was softer, the greens had a lot more Bermuda grass within them. It was a, what should we say, it was a one-off kind of scenario,
yeah, the conditions were different, weren't they? And everyone expected them to be. Chipping was different from around the greens, as you say. The green, or the kind of the grass composition was different too because of the overseed. So, you know, and above all of that, the clearly the winning score was lower because of the softness of the track. So, yeah, you know, you'd expect it to be back to normal this year, wouldn't you? You know, normal conditions in the normal point in the year. So. Yeah, one off.
If you're looking, though, for typical winners, I mean, Dustin Johnson is out there, isn't he? Long, high ball flight, powerful. It kind of brought all of those elements together. Now, the course is quoted as 7,475-yard par 72. And there are five holes with water hazards. So Tony Finau has a chance here. Not many water hazards. This isn't Sawgrass. The actual composition of the agronomy, this is where I get into my anal retentiveness. The whole course has a Bermuda grass base, but above that, fairways are ryegrass. The first cut, I didn't say rough this year, the first cut is ryegrass, 1.38 inches, so there's, yeah, effectively no rough. The greens are around about 6,500 square feet, and they feature a bent grass top. The stimps can run as high as 14, and there aren't many golf courses each year, either on the European Tour or the PGA Tour, that have stimps that run up to 14 once the sub air is pumping. Average score, the last time they ran this in April, sounds strange but true, 71.87, the year that Tiger won. So just as the field was just a snidge under par. And then last year in November, it was 71.75. So just a snidge easier, won a quarter stroke under par for the field. And they say it's 7,475 yards. But as we always mention on these research podcast previews, they mow the fairway grain against the players. So effectively, the fairways are wide. But they are, so they're easy to hit the fairways, but the run on them, they're effectively, they're very soft. So you do not get a lot of run on these fairways, which means a hell of a lot of long iron second approaches into a lot of these longer par fours. And of course, some very gettable par fives on the back nine, which is where most of the scoring tends to happen, isn't it? Back nine.
Yeah. Yeah, once you get yourself through Amen Corner, it's there's some opportunities, isn't there? 13, 15. Get yourself on a nice little birdie run as you're coming home.
I just love it. It's, for me, it's always the best major of the year by a country mile.
Yeah.
Especially when you've got some players in the mix.
Yeah. Well, it's recognisable, isn't it? Now, I was likening it to Cheltenham to you the other day, in that, you know, there's some it's continuous from year to year. There's, you know, some familiarity between the races each year at Cheltenham. There's clearly the familiarity from each of the holes that you see each and every year at Augusta National. Just brings it to life each year that you can kind of remember what you've seen previous years.
I am putting a full link in the description to my master's research piece, but this paragraph, I think, kind of summarises where we're at with Augusta. Augusta is definitely a game of two halves. Attack all of the four par fives and a number of shorter par fours, such as the third, the ninth and the 14th. Tiger Woods' quote, have you ever seen anything like that in your life? Par 3, 16th hole, named Rosebud, or Redbud rather, yields holes in one and birdies. But the rest of the course needs to be played with maturity and patience. Chasing scores tends to yield bogeys rather than birdies on these holes. So par golf across the majority of holes at Augusta National is more than acceptable. And that's the point, isn't it? You've got to really target you know, the 3rd, the 9th, the 14th, the 16th par 3 is a great birdie hole, and all of the par 5s. But on those other tougher par 4s, middle of the green, two-putt, get out of there, is more than acceptable. And I think, you know, in modern day golf, where, you know, we've got receptive greens, perfect scoring conditions, and, you know, players go for pins all of the time, somewhere like Augusta, where half the course is par golf, patient golf, and the rest of it is scorable, that can throw a lot of players kind of crazy.
Yeah, and I think that's why you need a bit of experience around there, and why you know some debutants clearly can play well, but you know in terms of actually getting over the line is a different matter. It was Sung Jae Im last year, wasn't it, in November, who was on debut, finished in the tie for second. So clearly players can get into the mix, but yeah, actually going on and winning. You know, there's always the name Fuzzy Zeller that gets dragged up at this point in the year, yeah, when people are talking about debutants. But that's the case in point, isn't it? You know, it's if you're looking at it for the first time, it's there's a lot of strategy, there's a lot of kind of majesty associated with the track that you need to understand before you can go and actually compete and contend and win.
To back that up, Dustin Johnson had played here 9 times. He'd had a 2nd, a 4th, a 6th and a 10th before winning. Clearly, the year before that was Tiger Woods. He played there 20 times and won 4 times. And before him, we had Patrick Reed, who hadn't had masses of success at Augusta. His best finish had been 22nd, but he had made 4 appearances there. Garcia, 18 appearances before winning. He was 4th and 8th twice, before eventually getting his first major, the green jacket, on his shoulders in 2017. The one real exception, or there's a couple, of course, Danny Willett. He'd only ever played here once, and he finished 38th on that particular outing, and Jordan Spieth back in 2015. He'd had one appearance the year before in 2014, when he almost won as a debutant. Bubba Watson won that year. And then Spieth came the next year and won at 11-1 in 2015. So, yeah, as you said, Fuzzy Zeller and all that. But you need to have had a go around here, really, if you've got a serious chance of winning. You've been very quiet so far, Barry. Are you listening intently to the content, or are you kind of brewing up a strategy? What do you look for at Augusta?
I look for, you know, I think I have to have a little bit of experience in who I'm picking. I'm not sure, you know, debutants, you're going to get lucky to get one of them maybe into your top, into the top 10 for an each way, or at least it feels that way. Spieth was kind of the anomaly to that, I suppose, in, you know, his early years, just took to the course like a duck to water. So,
yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of experience, a couple of maybe at least one go around at the event to, you know, one Masters under your belt before you get there. Somebody's just playing really solid tee to green. I'm always gonna look putting as a consideration, but if they're playing great tee to green, there's just a lot of holes you can get your par on, move on, and wait for the birdie opportunities to come to you, because they will. If you're hitting it very well tee to green, that ball is going to funnel in really close to some of those pins, and you just pick off your birdies as they come and avoid the disasters. So just a lot of solidity to the game. I don't think you need to be overly exceptional in any one particular aspect. Distance, yeah, of course helps a lot, but I think you can still do a lot of competing if you've got enough power in the engines. So, you know, look back towards Spieth, he was never particularly long back then, but he was long enough to be able to let the other elements of his game kick in and shine. I'm thinking maybe this year we might have to, personally, I might have to write off a few of the things we've focused on before, just as an experiment. Like last year, we all wrote off DJ because no number one had won it since Tiger, but maybe that was too narrow a view for one tournament, and you know, to expect a number one to go win that one tournament that happens once a year, yeah, it's unlikely it's going to happen. So a few things like that, I might just remove those blockers from the situation. It might make things a little bit trickier for a pick, but sure, like 2021, why not? We'll give it a go and a different approach to it, maybe.
How about the fact that no defending champion since Tiger Woods has won this since 2002? So DJ, yeah.
Thanks for that, Steve.
He could have us over 2 years running, because he clearly was world number one when he won here in November. And he could, you know, there's absolutely no reason why he can do exactly the same this year, of course, be that first defending champion to put the green jacket back on his shoulders since 2002. He is the 8-1 favourite. Bryson DeChambeau is 11-1. Same price as Justin Thomas. We have John Rahm at 12-1. Rory McIlroy somehow at 14-1. We have Jordan Spieth at 16-1. We have a disappearing off the charts Brooks Koepka. He is basically 16-1 everywhere, and Boyle Sports have just outed him to 22-1. Some books, like Treble Eight Sport, have actually taken him out of the betting because it looks highly, 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 highly unlikely that he plays. We've then got Xander at 22s. And by the way, I think Brooks was going to be my pick for the week, but anyway, we won't go down that route. Mm. Brooks, we've got Xander at 22s. Patrick Cantlay at 25s. Colin Morikawa at 28s. And then Reed at 30s, Tony Finau at 33s with Lee Westwood, Victor Hovland 35s, and the rest are 40-1 and above. Just to go back to that greens in regulation number, Barry, that you highlighted very eloquently. A lot of people, and I hear this a lot, you know, it's all strokes gained now. Yeah, strokes gained have their elephants, and some people say, oh, greens in regulation, it doesn't tell you anything. It's such a raw statistic, is, you know, it's pretty academic. Well, if you actually look at the winners here going back, Dustin Johnson ranked first for greens in regulation the week he won last year. Before that, of course, it was Tiger Woods. He ranked first for greens in regulation when he won. Patrick Reed is a little bit of an outlier, but then he always will be and always was. He was 21st for greens in regulation when he won. But then I'm looking at winners previous to that. These are the GIR ranks. 2nd, 6th, 2nd, 5th, 1st, 4th. Hitting greens is the absolute number one priority.
Yeah, whichever way you dress it up, whichever metric you look at, you're going to need to hit more than a fair share of greens in regulation, or have a short game, you know, a la Patrick Reed, where you can overcome that to some degree to be successful around it. It's never been a putting contest. You know, you look at the names of the players that have won over the years. But you need to be striking your irons. Your irons need to be absolutely spot on. And if that manifests itself into a high greens and regulation stat for the week, then that's the metric that's that can be consistent. And from those numbers that you've just read through a second ago, clearly it is consistent over the last few years. Got to hit your greens.
We can go into the greens numbers in a little bit, because I've done some analysis across the last 8 weeks, who's hitting the greens the most currently. Clearly we're recording this on day two of the World Match Play, so the World Match Play won't have any bearing on these greens in regulation numbers. A good summary then, chaps, for this kind of player we're looking for. It's your modern day top five kind of player, isn't it? Long, pretty straight, extremely high with their approaches, and players that are very, very strong with their irons and the regularity that they can actually hit greens on approach. Interesting.
Yeah, and I guess if you go back through the history of the winners here, you've got underlying form trends as well, haven't you? There's a long list of players going back for the last 10 years or so in your preview where you list their incoming form, but pretty universally, you would have needed a top 10 finish in the year to date before arriving at Augusta. To go on and win, and that's kind of an indication that your underlying form is strong enough to be able to compete and contend in a major like this. Even if you get as brutal as just taking out all of the players who haven't got a top 10 finish for this calendar year, there were a good 10, 11, maybe 12 events by the time we tee it up Augusta. That gives you a good starting point for limiting and reducing your shortlist down to a more manageable level.
DJ's academic last year, but I'll just mention it for the pod. 3 wins and 7 top 10s prior to November. But if you go back to Woods 2019, so back into our April slot, he'd finished 2 top 10s, 10th at the WGC and 5th at the Dell Match Play. That was the year he got beaten by Lucas Bjerregaard in the quarterfinal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What's happened to him missing the cut in Kenya?
Yeah, right off the boil, isn't he? Surprising. He was always one of those players that I used to enjoy watching, used to enjoy backing. He was one of my chosen favourites, I guess, that I used to back quite regularly. But he has gone right off the boil, which is an odd one, but he'll come back. He's a good player.
I didn't realise that your Gargunjeet Bula had kicked off this morning. Well done, Paul. He's going well, old Bula. You've got an iron in the fire this week. Is that correct?
Well, now you mentioned it, Steve. I'm fully expecting a double at the next one.
I do apologise. Let's move swiftly on. That year that Woods won, 10th at the WGC in Mexico and 5th at the Dell Match Play. Clearly, it was Tiger in the situation where he was not playing a lot of golf, but really focusing on the Masters. And that quarterfinal outing at the Match Play is an interesting look. Patrick Reed in 2018, the year that you two both backed him and won at 55-1. He'd had 3 top 10s. I mean, one at Copperhead, a second. One at Bay Hill, a seventh. I think at Bay Hill, if I remember correctly, he would have been like top 5 or 7 for greens in regulation at Bay Hill. And then he'd got out of the group at the Dell Match Play. So he'd won his group and got beat in the last 16. Sergio Garcia in 2017, he'd won the Dubai Desert Classic. He'd finished 12th at the WGC in Mexico. So there's something here about players that have shown in either the Match Play WGC or at the Stroke Play event prior.
Yeah.
Where they've clearly been trying to peak before peaking for Augusta.
Yeah, and in elite company as well. So.
Absolutely. Same with Danny Willett. A lot of people were on Danny that year, weren't they? Bad weather, high scoring for Augusta, very high, a lot of wind. He'd won, again, the Dubai Desert Classic. This is shouting Paul Casey so badly. And he'd finished 3rd at the WGC at Doral.
Yeah.
Jordan Spieth 2015, 1 win, 6 top 10s. I mean, he was playing out of his skin. 4th at Riviera, 1st at Copperhead, 2nd at TPC San Antonio, and 2nd the week before at the Golf Club of Houston. Bearing in mind also that DJ, when he won last year, finished 2nd the week before in Houston. Different golf course, but there aren't many of the big, big names, as you would expect, playing at TPC San Antonio the week before the Masters this year. The biggest name of them all probably is your punt, Barry, Tony Finau, who does play next week at the Valero Texas Open.
Definitely win that. Just
what a 9-1. Tony Finau ends his drought the week before the Masters by winning the Valero Texas Open 11-1. Well done, Tony Finau backers. Yeah, you can see it.
I went through the field. I mean, just taking that top 10 stat as a raw indicator.
Right.
Taking everyone out of the field who hasn't got a top 10 finish in this calendar year.
Who do we lose?
We lose quite a lot. We get down to a field of 58. Some of the names you'll lose. Bear in mind that we've got the Match Play this week, and as you say, there's still scope for some of these guys to reverse that trend, but some of the names: Hideki Matsuyama, Danny Willett, Gary Woodland, as you may expect, I guess, because he's been in and out of tournaments, isn't he? Ricky Fowler, Bubba Watson, 2-time winner, Lefty, three-time winner. Who else down this list? Matthew Wolf, Cameron Champ. You know, Champ's always been one that people have been quite keen to put up at Augusta National. There's some fairly, you know, notable names, I guess. Charles Schwartz was another one, you know, another former winner here, who hasn't got a top 10 finish in this calendar year. So trends are there to be broken, and they, you know, as always, these things can come back and bite you on the backside. But having some tangible form heading into Augusta can't be a bad thing, I don't think.
I think, yeah, hot form, definitely. Should we have some recent winning prices? Dustin Johnson was the second favourite last year. Second favourite, bearing in mind that he'd kind of dominated the FedEx Cup playoffs, hadn't he, with John Rahm. He'd won the FedEx Cup. He'd then had a couple of weeks off. I think he topped sixth or top seven finished at the US Open. Went to Houston, finished second, got beaten on Sunday by Carlos Ortiz. Whether DJ actually really wanted to win that or not, who never knows. But anyway, then came here, second favourite to Bryson DeChambeau. And before you knew it, Bryson was hitting it in the trees on number 10.
Yeah.
And his price was collapsing. But DJ was 9-1 second favourite. Woods was 16-1. And Reed was 55-1, as you guys very well know. Garcia 45-1, Willett 66-1, and then Spieth 12-1, Bubba Watson 28-1, Scott 28-1, Watson 55s, and Charles Svartzel, the biggest price of the lot in 2011, 90-1.
I hate Charles Svartzel. I had an epic year that year that he won, and somehow I had the other four of the top five, and that's absolute expletive, railed off four birdies in a row to steal the Masters from my pocket, and you know, probably, you know, a little bit more painfully for one of the other four guys in the top five, a jacket off their shoulders. It was. Wow. It was horrific watching it happen. It was like a car crash in slow motion. There's nothing you could do about it.
Your Schwartzel voodoo doll clearly wasn't working that day.
No. Just didn't happen. Look, and there's just a perfect example of the kind of craziness that can happen at that course. It's brilliant. It rarely fails to deliver like really good drama. DJ made it a bit of a non-event last year. But again, I think we need to maybe put a little bit of a protective bubble around last year's Masters in November, just for the time being, until we get a bit of perspective on it, because it's very hard to judge it as it stands right now versus other years. It might be only in a 2 or 3 years' time that it kind of shows itself for what it was. But yeah, that's my kind of thoughts. I won't lean too heavily on somebody not going well in November, because the course was playing different from what it will do. The grass was a little bit different than what it usually is.
I think those greens certainly weren't pure bent grass. There was a lot of Bermuda in those greens.
They have to have.
You can kind of see that from Cameron Smith and Sung Jae-im, because we know that Sung Jae-im is an absolute Bermuda grass monster. But yes, it was an empty golf course on a very soft Augusta track. Yeah, one of those, isn't it? What you do take from these recent winning prices, though, there's that seam, isn't there? You know, Watson at 55s. Reed at 55s, Garcia at 45s, Willett at 66s, and Scott and Watson at 28s in there. There's that mid-seam, 28s through sort of 50s and 66s. Good players who are in decent form that actually pop out and win this.
Yeah, and that's, you know, they're punter-friendly prices, aren't they? They're kind of ones where people want to get involved with an each way bet at you know, at 50-1 or give or take a few points either side, and take your chances, particularly when so many of the bookies will go 8, maybe 10 places each way in a week or so's time. So it makes it so popular with the punters, I think.
Short field, you can rule out quite a few quite quickly based on historical data. So all of a sudden, instead of, you know, you're not looking at a field of 144 or 156, we're looking at what, 80, something around that, guys?
Yeah,
is it?
Yeah, yeah. You know, 85 to 90, something like that.
Chop out a few of the old dudes, the former champions who were, you know, just there for like probably one of the most enjoyable weeks of their year. They just got, they get to play the Masters. It's incredible. Happy days. Good, you know, more good for them. We're all envious of it. You know, my friend Bobby always leans on, what's the stat? Nobody over the age of 40. So players over the age of 40, majors and that age bracket just don't really match up that well. I think Vijay was one. I'm not sure if anybody's broken the duck in recent years. Darren Clark did. But it's, I think,
Stenson?
I think the stats on US soil, nobody over the age of 40 has won since Vijay or something. There might be one since then, but yeah.
So I'm staring, and I know I shouldn't, and I know I don't want to. And he already stung me when I backed him for the world match play because he lost his first round. We're going. I'm staring at Paul Casey, 40-1.
Can you guys?
He's 41 years of age, isn't he, Casey?
Just let Casey go. You just need to do it. You'll feel so much more freedom in your lives if you let him go. If he wins, so be it, you know.
Has that post-it note dropped off your wall, Steve?
I'm just looking. No, it's still there. He's still there.
It's just, it's, no, too much, don't, too much
don't
torture.
Don't ever back Paul Casey, that's there. And don't ever back Webb Simpson at the Masters, that's there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just not long enough. And that brings us on, really. What kind of stats else, what else can we get to that brings this field down to a more manageable level? Paul Casey, born in Cheltenham, by the way, in Gloucestershire. Nice spot. 43 years of age. Thank you, Wikipedia, for that. Right. Yeah, let's look at some of these. Let's kind of see where else we can go with this.
It's the par 4 birdie or better is one you guys mention year on year, right? It's an interesting kind of niche one to look at, but it seems to hold quite strongly year on year.
Yeah, it does. Kind of logically in my mind, before I get to that point, I want to see players that are powerful enough and long enough to contend, I guess. And I kind of use that par 4 birdie or better to finally refine where I'm going with it. But before I get to that point, this distance to apex, which is the stat that you've pulled out in the preview, Steve, is one that seems really quite consistent as well. And players that are in the top 70 either this year or last year for distance to apex tend to be the ones that tends to be a consistent stat as to how to get around. And that's kind of an indication of power, isn't it? It's an indication of players that can hit the ball far enough and hard enough to contend around a track that is, well, does set up quite long.
Every winner since 2008 has been in the top 35% in terms of power hitting on tour. The best measure to use is distance to apex, and that is distance in yards from the tee to the apex of their shot on measured par 4 and par 5 tee shots. Okay? And just running through these numbers, you know, DJ last year, 26th. Tiger, top 40. Patrick Reed, top 55. Sergio Garcia was 4th. Danny Willett, 62nd. Jordan Spieth, 67th. And then everyone beyond that, Watson, Scott, they're in the top 20s. Even Charles Fulton was top 30s. Big, high ball flight. And that makes sense, especially in years where the greens are up to those stimp levels that, you know, that the Augusta guys are wanting. You know, you've got to be attacking with a ball that's dropping, haven't you? You know, coming in with a low ball flight just isn't going to work around these putting surfaces on these incredibly undulating contoured greens. Now, every year, you know, these trends get destroyed, but you know, there were some really interesting players that I've got a real eye on for this. And you look at that distance to apex statistic and it kind of shoots them down. And the one that's really shouting to me that could be, and this is something I'd like to discuss with you two, is, you know, for me, if you're looking for people that are consistent with their irons, consistent in terms of greens in regulation and in terms of strokes gained on approach, and a good driver of the golf ball, but has he got the actual ball flight and the power to contend around here and win? For me, you know, the debating point for me is Colin Morikawa.
Yep.
Yeah, because he's kind of middling at best on that stat, isn't he? I'm saying at 106th for 106. This year to be, say, 94th last year. So yeah, it's consistent, isn't it? It's, you know, there's no great deviation there. One attempt here, 44th. You know, to make the cut on your first attempt, fair enough, but it's not screaming at you.
We know he's as hard as nails. We know he's got the, you know, the mental strength to win majors. He's done that, and to take out big titles. He won the WGC a couple of weeks ago. And this isn't a putting contest, and we know that Morikawa's weakness is the putting. Especially when you're on him, and then he wins the week after when you're not. But yeah, Morikawa's one for me. Oh, I'd love to back him. But the stats are ruling him out. I'm talking in terms of brute, you know, power off the tee. I called him the other week the modern Jim Furyk, and that's not right, is it? But he just hasn't quite got the mumbo, I think, to be a sure. I mean, who am I seeing a few spots above him in that distance to apex statistic? Is Francesco Molinari. And as we saw with Francesco 2 years ago, he came very, very close to winning the Masters and was clearly right in the heat of the battle on that back nine Sunday before Tiger just kind of outlasted him.
Yeah. Well, again, if you get as specific as taking out all the players that are outside of that top 70 stat for distance to apex for this year and for last year, I get down to, from my short list of 58 before, if I've taken out the remaining debutants and then these players that aren't inside that stat, I'm down to 28 players. And as you said, you lose Colin Morikawa, you lose Francesco Molinari, you also lose the likes of Jordan Spieth, and Jordan Spieth's going to be an incredibly popular player, but he's sitting 120th for the season to date for distance to apex. Now, maybe that's because he's kind of reined back a little bit to get some more accuracy. Whether that works around Augusta National, we'll have to see in a couple of weeks' time. But if you're getting as raw as taking him out on that stat, Spieth goes, Tyrrell Hatton goes, Webb Simpson goes.
I think you need to refine, just grab Spieth before you kind of go along a bit further. Up until the last few weeks, he's been hitting like high block fades, low snap hooks. Those balls aren't going to go very far before they reach their apex. So if there's a way to like fine tune and look at his last like four or five events where he started hitting the ball well, I'd say that you'll see an uptick in where he ranks there.
Yeah, I agree. There's also a mix. I mean, with all of this, there's a mix of the courses that these players play. I mean, he's been playing Pebble Beach and, you know, windy events in Florida where you want to keep the ball low. But yeah, I know, yeah, you've got to take some of this stuff with a pinch of salt, haven't you? But
yeah.
Who else is ruled out?
So, Louis Oosthuizen. And Oosthuizen's always a popular pick at this course, isn't he? Patrick Reed, again, another former winner. Sitting at 130th in that stat for the year to date. Lee Westwood, who's been playing well, of course, recently. Daniel Berger, another one who's notwithstanding any injury issues potentially, he's been playing some cracking stuff this year as well, hasn't he? So Zach Johnson, another former winner, goes. So yeah, there's a lot of players. Victor Hovland, another one who disappears at this point as well. So
Victor.
So yeah.
Now there was a greens in regulation and a strokes gained approach monster who seems to have completely lost his way in the last 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, before that, he was really quite consistent, wasn't he? He started the year off really well. But, I don't know. Again, the stats would bear out that this is one way to really restrict your shortlist, but we're losing some names that are both viable and are going to be popping the punts in a couple of weeks' time. So, yeah, it's... Know. But again, the preview, your numbers bear it out quite clearly that this is something that should be considered. So treat it as you may want to.
The year that Spieth won this, he was 44th for distance to apex. So he was clearly hitting the ball higher up in that part of his, when he was in his pomp. Yeah. It's true, it's what Barry says. If you could look at these stats granularly, I'm sure we could. You could get to the stage where actually over the last couple of weeks, say at the players, he's been actually hitting the ball a lot purer. But yeah, difficult, isn't it? So, okay, distance to apex is important. Another statistic I think is very important is going for the green. DJ, 18th for going for the green. The season prior to winning this, clearly that season would have ended at the Tour Championships. There was a couple of outings after that, one at the US Open. 24th Patrick Reed was for going for the green the year he won. Sergio was 7th. That's inbound that particular season as well. Brooks Koepka, you know, the year he came very close behind Woods, he was ranking first for that. DJ was also tied for second, he was 11th. Woods wasn't actually in that statistic, so, you know, it's like everything, you can rule stuff out. You know, it doesn't happen every single year, it's these outliers. But, I mean, Tiger Woods around Augusta, statistics didn't really matter. The fact of the matter is, though, what did matter with Tiger heading into that is that he was absolutely crushing it with his irons. Arriving at Augusta. And that, to me, again, is a very significant trend. We can go into that in a short while. Now, Barry, you mentioned this par 4 birdie or better statistic, didn't you? And again, that is something that comes out in the preview in terms of a statistic that seems to really yield some real difference for this. Par 4 birdie or better. Now, Dustin Johnson ranks second for that in the season previous to winning this last year. Tiger Woods, again, was in the top 12 in the season previous. So that would have included the year that he won that emotional victory at the Tour Championship. Then Patrick Reed, 7th. Sergio, 7th. Danny Willett, 2nd. Jordan Spieth, 1st. Bubba Watson, 5th. In the season that they actually won the Masters. So effectively, that's saying... you really ideally would want players that are in the top 12 either last season or this season for part 4 birdie or better, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be great to have a list, wouldn't it, with that information?
Yeah.
I'm glad that I sent this to you guys on email yesterday. If we run through last year top 12 in this season, Justin, JT at 1, Ryan Palmer at 4. Oh, sorry, I'm doing this wrong. This is this season. This season, Thomas is number 1. Palmer at 4. Joaquin Neiman at 5. I almost went back to my old ways. 6, Patrick Reed. 7, Brooks Koepka, who isn't playing. 9, Victor Hovland. 10, Abraham Ancer. And 12, Scotty Scheffler. If we go back, rewind to last season, top 12 players in this field. Fleetwood at 9. Big Bad Bryson at 8. Patrick Reed at 7. Reed is in both years. JT at 6. JT's in both years. Hatton at 4. Scheffler 3. DJ 2. And Webb Simpson number 1.
Yeah, and again, it's another really quite consistent stat, isn't it? It's one that has been borne out over the last few years and one that really is a strong indicator of someone who's going to go well at this year's renewal. Again, just taking the same logic and applying it to my shortlist that I came back to before, our list of 28 goes down to 12 and you lose players like, well, I mean, and I've extended this out. I know you've talked about top 12, top 15, potentially that stat. I extended it out to top 25 just to make sure, you know, you're not losing anyone just for the sake of an odd fraction of a point here or there. But you're still losing the likes of Sergio Garcia, John Rahm at that point, Justin Rose, Paul Casey. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, John Rahm for the year to date, 84th par 4 birdie or better. Last year, 54th. So, you know, regardless of how well he's striking the ball and his irons and his greens in regulation recently, has been spot on. But he's just not converting those birdie opportunities on par 4s, which is what this stat's clearly looking at. Justin Rose, Paul Casey, Shane Lowry, Jason Day, another one. And again, you know, these are players that are potentially going to be quite popular again. Mark Leishman, another one who's a popular pick at a major championship. So yeah, you get down from here, I get down to a list of 12 players, which is my kind of final shortlist from a pure statistical perspective. Some of which, you know, again, you could make a case for lopping them off further. I'll read through this final 12 in alphabetical order just for reference. Adam Scott.
You're so smooth, Paul. Adam Scott. I'm getting out one of my world famous post-it notes here. Yeah. Adam Scott, yeah.
See if the winner's out of this list as well. Adam Scott, Brooks Koepka, who's, as you said, is pretty unlikely to play. Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson. Now, again, do you go to the point of saying, well, he's defending, he's world number one? I don't know. I've left him in. I'm not going to take him out on either count because I'm not sure you can realistically. Joaquin Niemann, Justin Thomas, Patrick Cantlay, Rory McIlroy. I don't know if anyone saw any of Rory playing yesterday in the first day of the match play, but that would be enough to put me off.
It's like a Jackson Pollock painting. It was just all over.
Whose swimming pool was that?
Listen, come on. He didn't hit it directly into a pool. It ripped off a cart path. Like, he's just...
Oh, well, I'll tell you one thing. I wouldn't have been... That ball would be on my... That's going to be on my mantle for the his Rory's ball.
Yeah,
This is not like the Matrix where he can just plug into the Pete Cowan server and download, like, you know, refined or, like, you know, golf skills to fix what he's going through right now. It's like... It might click for Rory, but...
We've said, Barry, where Rory's going to get his first win this year. We know where it's going to be. Let's just say that. It's not going to be the Masters.
Mm. So Rory McIlroy, Scottie Scheffler is in the final dozen.
Yeah, he's very prominent, Scheffler.
Yeah, absolutely. Tommy Fleetwood, Tony Finau. There you go, Barry. Perhaps your bet isn't all lost or at this point after all. And finally, Xander Schauffele. So I'll just read them through quickly again just for reference. Scott, Koepka, DeChambeau, Johnson, Niemann, Thomas, Cantlay, McIlroy, Scheffler, Fleetwood, Finau, Schauffele. And if those stats that we've listed hold firm for another year, then the winner is in that dozen players. We shall see.
I don't like that. It doesn't match up with a few of my ideas.
Yeah, scrap that.
Yeah, it's actually a lot of fun kind of drilling down and refining the list by various metrics. It's interesting how it plays out, and I'm a demon for doing it because you're trying to break down the field and get to a short list where you can, you know, hopefully just use your spider senses to make the final pick. Yeah. And then, you know, you use a metric and it cuts off a guy you really fancied to put a punt on. You're like, oh no, I better change that one.
Yeah, so. I better relax that stat a little bit. I mean, the names that caught my eye, Scottie Scheffler, as I just said to you, Steve, it's just a second ago, he's playing some nice stuff. And again, he played some nice stuff yesterday in the match play. 19th here on debut last year, 45-1. So in that kind of sweet spot price-wise
that'd be some story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Scottie Scheffler wins his first ever PGA Tour event, top level, and it's the Masters. Is that kind of fantasy land? I wonder if a PGA Tour rookie is actually. Would you classify Danny Willett as a PGA Tour rookie? Had he won on the? I don't think he'd won in the on the PGA Tour previous to winning this, had he?
No, he'd won the Dubai Desert Classic a few months before, which was...
Oh, he'd won some great European Tour events, but I don't think he'd ever won on the PGA Tour. And at Charles Schwarzel, I doubt it.
You're good shade on Danny. He didn't. You're right. So before the Masters, he had won the BMW International Open in 2012, Nedbank Golf Challenge in 14, Omega European Masters in 15, and the Dubai Desert Classic in February of the year he won the Masters.
And Charles Fartzell had never won in America, had never won on the PGA Tour when he won this in 2011. He's gone on to win the Valspar in 2016.
He was
young. He had won three Alfred Dunhills in his home nation and a Tisrani Open.
An anomaly result. I mean, it's a bit of an anomaly result that he won it. Ripped off the four birdies at the end. Put himself in the position to do it, though, so... He was young at the time. He was only 20. He's 36 now, so he was 26 at the time when he did it. Which kind of... Himself and Spieth are the real outliers in young players to win the Masters for a long... Like, you know, last 20 years, looking back. Everybody else seems in that, like, 30-year-old kind of age bracket. Or 30-plus.
The thing is, it'd be very easy, wouldn't it, to look at a... Scotty Scheffler and go, well, he can't win it. He's never even won on the PGA Tour. But, you know there are cases here of players that have never won in America or on the PGA Tour and go and win the Masters.
Yeah, and that was a decent enough spin out in November, wasn't it? Top 20 on your debut round here. That 45-1 as well, when the bookies form their final books, what might we get? And, you know, unless he does something mad at the match play this week. You might get 66.
Isn't it virtually his home course this week, I heard on the commentary yesterday?
Yeah.
Out of interest, Barry, you are the whisperer. How do you think Patrick Reed's hitting it at the moment?
He's a bit funky.
Is he in the kind of space he was 3 years ago when he won this? Or I wonder if he's like, maybe...
Maybe the run in is mistimed a little bit. He looked a little bit more solid, just from memory, thinking back to it. I remember back when he won it, or in the weeks preceding it. And do you know what? The trigger for me was that he had started working on this whirlybird finish that was the end result of him hitting fade shots. And I could see him working on that in the weeks coming up to Augusta, and that was the trigger for me to show that he was incredibly focused on working on a specific game plan to attack the course at Augusta, and that was the trigger for me to back him. And I don't even think I looked at any models or stats to affirm that. I just trusted my
eyes.
Well,
you wouldn't, Barry, because if you had, you wouldn't have backed him. Yeah. That's the point.
Yeah. So it was just a fortuitous kind of coincidence of me watching a lot of golf, seeing that, and it matching up in my head to put the bet on him for Augusta.
But where is he now in 2021 compared to where he was then in 2018?
He doesn't seem to have it all together. It's just he puts together stretches of holes, and then he has this, like, what, you know. It's just a few very loose shots kind of seem to kick in. I wonder if he's just mistimed his peaking. He might pull it together. But then again, if he won it a couple of weeks afterwards, it's timing a peak in any for any sport is a difficult thing to achieve. So maybe he clicks a week or two afterwards. Maybe he gets it together. I mean, if we knew that... we wouldn't be sharing this information. We'd just be making lots of money off it. You know, we wouldn't be talking about this information, you know.
You'd want him to be getting out of the group this week, wouldn't you? Really? At the match play?
Yeah, it shows a level of form, doesn't it? But then, okay, we're only a day into the match play at the moment right now, sitting here on Thursday morning, and it was an absolute bloodbath for favourites like yesterday in the
match. And it is match play. It is different. But look, there's nothing... If there's ever an event that you think could, like, get his juices going, it's a match play event. So if he can get a couple more matches after the group stages under his belt, that's only going to be his benefit. Even if he gets absolutely nuked in one of the rounds, it'll help him kind of get a few more of these, like, hyper-competitive rounds under his belt.
Wacky Neiman is very prominent He was in those par four birdie or better numbers. And I'm seeing him very prominent right now on my greens in regulation 8-week tracker.
Yep. Yep. 45th distance to Apex.
He's in ninth spot.
Yeah, statistically he fits, doesn't he? It's like 45th for distance to Apex, 5th for par 4 birdie or better for the season. Got a couple of top 10s so far this year. You know, he made his debut back in 2018, missed a cut, but he's had a look around the place at least. 66, what might we get in a week or so's time? 80 to 1 potentially.
I have a little bit of an outsider that's popping into my head at the moment.
Mm.
It's Corey Connors.
Oh God, yeah.
There's a lot of good things going on there, including his price, especially when we start seeing the extended places. But you know, just to run off a few high level stats, greens in regulation, he's 15th. Birdie average, just a general birdie average. I'm just looking at his page here on the PGA Tour site. He's 32nd for that. Scoring average, he's 17th. Just cherry picking a few of these stats. There's a lot of good things going on. Like strokes gained, tee to green, he's 12th. If we're looking into that kind of area, into the strokes gained. He has one appearance at the Masters a few years back, 2016, I think it was. He missed the cut, but you know or 2017. It's a long time ago, so. It's nice to have one or two outsiders, you know, the dream of hitting the big jackpot win. But, you know, it's with the 10, maybe 11 places we'll see, maybe 12, somebody will go, like some crazy bookie.
Someone might go 12, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
You know, we'll see. If you can get him at 80 to 100 to 1, that should be a fun bet for the week.
It is. It's one of those events, isn't it? You know, as you said, with the short field, 85, 90 players are thereabouts, and you can chop off quite a few of those off because they're just there for the just for the fun of it, and the bookies do go mad with it. We do get a lot of places and some juicy prices, so there's scope for picking some players up who are a little bit further down the list. Yeah,
I'm so distraught that Brooks isn't playing this because Brooks was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, the rest of the field didn't need to show up if Brooks was playing. I think
Brooks was just going to win this.
Yeah.
He's absolutely perfect. Across every element, greens and regulation tracker I'm looking at, the approach tracker, strokes gained across that par 4 birdie or better number. We know, not even worth mentioning him on the distance to Apex and power kind of. He's just, oh man. He's absolutely ripe for this.
Who's Brooks Light? Who's the Brooks substitute or the stand-in or his stunt double for this for the Masters?
Yeah.
It sucks. I'd say he's pretty sure. Pissed off as well about it because it was all lining up so well.
One last thing I'll mention here from a statistics perspective. I keep these greens in regulation tracker. So basically a moving window of who's hitting the most greens, and we do it across all the skill stats, strokes gained and traditional stats. Last year in the GIR tracker, bearing in mind we've already discussed that GIR is king here. DJ was third in the tracker going into the event. The year before that, Tiger was second. Reed is the complete, he pushes the boundary, the trend disappears with Reed. So, it could be another Reed type year. But the year before that, in the tracker, Garcia was second in my tracker. Willett was sixth. I mean, these are super high numbers, yeah? We've had so far a third, a second and a sixth. And then we get a little bit more kind of, I wouldn't say fringy, but, you know, Spieth. Spieth was 15th in the tracker. And before him, Bubba was 12th. The thing with Spieth was as well, he played the week before at Redstone where he had spanked it and he was ninth for greens in regulation. I think even before that, he might have been second at the tournament before that. So there you go. So anything up to top 15 in this greens in regulation tracker. So let's just see where we're at right now. Bearing in mind, there's going to be a little few changes to this, my GIR tracker. Number one, Brooks Koepka. Number two, John Rahm. Number three, a name we haven't mentioned so far, but a previous winner here, Sergio Garcia. Number four, Corey Connors. There you go, Baron. Tied fifth, Zalatoris and Justin Rose, who's a bit of an Augusta specialist. Seven, Jordan Spieth, tied with Paul Casey. Nine tied, we've got Neiman and Kokrag, who's been playing some great stuff. 11, Wolf. 12, Cantlay. Victor Perez at 13. Colin Morikawa at 14. Matsuyama at 15. Bubba Watson, 16. Fitzpatrick and Wiesberger. And then 19, a player, again, we haven't mentioned, Justin Thomas. Bearing in mind, JT, of course, appears in that par four birdie or better number for the last two seasons.
Yep. Yeah, he's got some good progressive form, hasn't he?
Could it be the year that JT finally clicks at Augusta? Because up until this point, he hasn't been that great around here, has he?
Well, I'd say if you read through his five attempts, 39th, 22nd, 17th, 12th, and then 4th in November. Mm. So getting progressively closer and closer.
Getting his head round, isn't he?
Mm. As you say, he sits at the top of that par 4 birdie or better stat for the season today. 6th last year, so clearly one of his strengths.
I know it's a silly question to ask, but I'll ask it anyway. What happened in the Kuchar match yesterday with JT? Was it a mixture of Kuchar playing the typical grinding match player that we know he is and JT over the place the first nine holes?
Kuchar, not at all. Thomas was 3-under through his 16 holes.
Oh, wow.
Kuchar was something like 5-under through the first seven and just stole a march on him. And that can happen in match play, can't it? You come up against a player of any player who just gets off to an absolute flyer and your back's against the wall from the start. I don't think JT played poorly.
So he made good golf, but Kuchar was on a different planet.
Yeah, yeah. He made one bogey in those 16 holes to JT.
Kuchar shot 30 on the opening nine. He was 6-under. I mean, how do you fight that?
Yeah. You can't, can you?
So yeah, I wouldn't dismiss JT out of because he lost that match, and as a result of losing that match, he's going to be up against it now to make it through the group. Is that a blessing in disguise when it comes to Augusta preparation? You can argue it both ways, can't you? You can build a narrative for either scenario. So.
It looks like just a word on the match play. It looks interesting for a lot of possible playoffs tomorrow night. On Friday night after the third round. Yeah, or Saturday, yeah. Wait, Friday, yeah. I've lost the day of the week. That's what this lockdown has done.
There were a lot of players yesterday who got beaten, who you wouldn't expect to have been beaten. So if
what,
that reverses
what price
today,
is Jordan Spieth going to be when he wins it for the Masters?
Come here, now's actually a good time to shout out to the listeners. If there's any stats or metrics you use to make your picks for the Masters, shoot us a tweet. Be interesting to see the different perspectives because, well, you know, as the stats have proven in the reviews, the guys haven't picked a winner in forever, so they need a little help. Steve and Paul do.
Oh, we do. Yeah. Listen to this. 2012 third, 2013 eighth, 2014 fifth, 2017 fourth, 2019 12th. Forget about the numbers, forget about the trends. Just go back to what we just mentioned yesterday about Matt Kuchar. He's 125-1 right now for the Masters.
Yeah, and he's got a good record there, hasn't he?
Fantastic record. And clearly, from what we're saying yesterday, rounding into some kind of form.
Yeah, which, given what we'd seen out of the previous few weeks, he's been showing absolutely nothing. But, clearly he's got a liking for all Austin Country Club, and we saw that last year. He came close last year, didn't he? And he's got a liking for Augusta National. Again, that much is clear.
If I could say one thing about Kuchar, it's his swing has become even more Kuchar, if that makes any sense at all. Like, he's It looks a little bit contrived, but it his always has kind of in a way. That's obviously functional at the moment because he was 6-under on the front nine against Justin Thomas, who's clearly in very good form, having just come off the Players' Win. So, is Kuchar like my? The other question is, when you're picking these long odds guys, I always like to have to have a certain element of like, can this guy win this tournament? I just don't think Kuchar's got that winning part aspect of the to the bet. So for me, that backing Kuchar is really just a bet to grab the place money on him.
Agreed. Completely agreed. I think the whole MO of this podcast isn't for us to actually say who we're going to be backing. We'll be clearly going through that on the Tuesday prior to Augusta with our picks and tips podcast. But this whole podcast was about trends, how we look at the field, ways of potentially bringing that field down to a manageable level. I think we've kind of got to the end of the road then, haven't we? We've mentioned some players we're interested in, some players that clearly make a sense statistically, and some stuff that the listeners can go away and do their own research around. As Barry said, if there's trends out there that we've missed or that you use and if you have used to a level of success, do not hesitate to email us. Don't hesitate to comment on YouTube or just message us via whatever means you can. It'd be good to hear from you. I think that's us done, chaps.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Until the tip show. Well, we've got the Valero Texas Open on Tuesday of next week, haven't we? In the meantime, the little appetizer.
Charlie Hoffman at 18-1 to win the Valero Texas Open. I can't wait.
Yeah, or even shorter after he wins this week at Corrales.
I reckon he's only using this week as a warm-up for the big... That's his major next week, Valero Texas Open, Charlie. You think about Charlie playing some great stuff, and what happens if he can win that next week? He gets his invite to the Masters. Mm. Travel straight from Texas to Georgia. Stranger things have happened.
Yep.
Thanks for your time, Paul. Thanks for your time, Barry.
Yeah, no
Cheers,
worries.
Boys.
Don't forget about the 888 Sport offer out there. 66-1 on DJ, 100-1 on John Rahm, 100-1 on Bryson DeChambeau for new customers 18+ with 888 Sport. Key terms and conditions, of course, available at Golf Betting System. It's been a blast. We will be back next week for the Valero Texas Open. Thanks for your time. Goodbye.